The unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect truth is seldom met with, even in 100,000 myriad kalpas. Now we can see and hear it, we can remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself. Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. I think most of you know that our dear Reverend Master Hubert died the other day, Tuesday evening. His timing was perfect. We were doing one of the ceremonies for the Buddha's Parinirvana, the reading of the Buddha's last teachings. We had a feeling he was going to go. We came back after the ceremony that he was gone. It was perfect. He just slipped away without us there. And for some people, that's just the thing, not to have people there all the time, but we've given some space in which to do what you need to do. So it was just perfect. And the next morning, well, first we all get together. This is what we do. We all get together and wash the body and dress the body. It's kind of very familial and informal and just family milling around looking for the water and the washcloths and all that. And then we dress them in his robes and put a rosary around his hands. You're supposed to put your hands in the hand in gassho, but that never seems to work. So we just, you know, lay them on the body. And put him in the coffin. We always have a coffin to spare. We figured that might be for him, but now we've got another one. Who knows before? And then we took him to the Buddha Hall and put him in the Founder's Shrine overnight. And somebody would sit with the body in turns through the night. And in the morning after breakfast, we had a viewing of the body ceremony when we put him right in the middle of the hall here on the bowing seat. And we all sit in our morning service places, all the monks and the lay people who happen to be here. And we just sit and contemplate this husk, the Reverend Master Hubert husk. Because there was a sense that he was gone, you know, he was fine. Just this husk that we take care of and venerate in gratitude, actually. And then we all processed up to the lotus house, put him in Reverend Master Hario's van, which is the only thing it'll hold a coffin, and we drove him up to Arika. And now he's in the fridge, and we'll do the cremation in a few days. And then we'll have the funeral on Saturday the 20th, and you're all warmly invited. It's nice to be able to do it this way, so people can come from afar. You have ashes, you don't have a rush. And so I think it'll be nice to just say goodbye to our old friend. But he did great. It was great. He didn't fall down and break a hip. He wasn't in pain. We were able to take care of him, and it was all just as it should be. So today is Renunciation Day, the Buddha's renunciation, and we essentially know the story, so I won't go through it. You know how he left his home and went to search for the truth. I'm going to talk a little bit about renunciation and the middle way, because I think renunciation is the middle way. It's not some extreme or something. You hear renunciation, it kind of sounds like getting rid of things, repudiating things. So I prefer the term relinquishment. And Reverend Master Hubert called it leaving things behind, leaving home life behind, if you're a monk. Leaving things behind is better even. We're moving on, we don't need these things anymore. We're not throwing them away, we're not repudiating something. We're just leaving it behind. Very, very nice. And when we hear this term, renunciation or relinquishment, or even leaving things behind, we tend to respond in one of two ways. Most of us think, renunciation, leaving things behind. It sounds daunting and chilling and even frightening. I don't want to leave things behind. I love my family and my cake and my stuff and my friends and my job and my life and everything, my comforts. I don't want to leave them behind. Ourselves, I don't want to leave me behind, you know. And a few of us might think, renunciation, it sounds lovely. Leaving behind all the tiresome things and complexities. Leaving behind all the people I don't like. Leaving behind my job. Simplify. Maybe be out in the woods all alone eating pine needles, you know. Being rid of myself, you know. Some of us don't like ourselves very much. We'd like to be rid of us. However, neither of these is the way. And of course, it's never that simple. the Buddha taught the middle way between the extremes. And this is much closer to the real meaning of renunciation. You're not doing some grand thing, throwing away everything. And you don't have to be afraid, actually. The middle way seems to be such a simple teaching and is actually really profound and can be quite subtle. One of the monks in the Thai forest tradition, a disciple of Ajahn Mahabua, called Venerable Ajahn Panyavaddo, he was a Westerner, actually he was an Englishman who went to the East and started training with Venerable Mahabua, kind of, I'll just try it out, and never left. He was there for 40 years. So he never, you know, he didn't sort of say, I'm going on. He just stayed and trained and became deeply wise. And there's a book about him which is really nice. But in this book, he says, the middle way isn't some kind of, you know, middle-of-the-road thing for everybody. It's different for different people. Because it's the way of bringing ourselves back into balance. If we tend to be kind of greedy and self-indulgent, the middle way for us is practicing more restraint with the things we're greedy about. If we tend to be somewhat ascetic, or if we hate ourselves, the middle way is more about being kind to ourselves, compassionate towards ourselves, kind to the body, not punishing it. It's different. To take care of the body, to take care with our own difficulties, and then being kind to ourselves, we can be kind to other people. If we're a bit lazy, maybe we need to apply a little bit more vigor as our middle way, or if you tend to be rushing around too much, doing things too quickly, our middle way may be more slowing down a bit, taking care with things. We're all different, and this seems to make perfect sense. The middle way is that which helps to bring us back into balance. So we need to know what we need to do. Just kind of study the self, as it were, and see. Oh, I see, I tend to cut people off and be too quick. Just slow down and be kinder, you know. Renunciation or relinquishment is really about relinquishing our selfishness or the things that create suffering. Because our selfishness is what creates suffering, me and my stuff, or me and my views, what I want. We all have selfishness. We all want the things we like, and we don't want the things we don't like. And these things are important to us. We all feel, you know, I'm important. We all want to protect ourselves from harm. We want to be happy. The Buddha wanted to be happy. There's nothing wrong with wanting to be happy. But the problem comes when we cling on to something, thinking it'll make us happy, and it generally doesn't. Or when we want something, it's at the expense of somebody else, then you start having problems. If we feel we have to have a certain thing or a certain person in order to be happy, we're setting ourselves up for suffering, as we mostly know. We're dependent on that thing or that person, we're not free. We have to have this thing, we're needy, we're bound to them. And relinquishment or renunciation is letting go of that clinging to something or someone or some situation or some view of myself or life or health, whatever it might be, whatever we deeply cling to. Just relinquish. It's not getting rid of something. It's relinquishing the grip. I have to have this. Otherwise, everything's awful. Leaving behind our attachment to it, just relinquishing the grip, letting it go. And relinquishing attachment to something is not indifference or coldness. On the contrary, we can enjoy life more if we're not clinging to things because we're not worried all the time we're going to lose something. We can love people more when we're not needy and kind of squeezing them with, you know, I want this out of this from this person. They're going to make me happy. It's a terrible responsibility to feel only you can make this other person happy and they depend entirely on you. It kind of squashes things. But if you can just love beings without that grasping and neediness, If you can just enjoy things without having to have them, it's a lot easier. We can breathe and we're not so bound to things. We don't suffer so much. The Christian Bible has a little admonition, which I really like. Love thy neighbor as thyself. Not more than thyself, not less than thyself, and not in a different way from thyself, but as thyself. And conversely, this means love thyself as thy neighbor. Not more than thy neighbor, not less than thy neighbor. We're not different from our neighbor. We're actually pretty much the same. We're not special. We don't have to be specially wonderful or specially horrible. We're just a person with our stuff like everybody else. And if we can just see ourselves as a person, not special, not the center of the universe, this helps a lot. It helps greatly with relinquishment, and it's following the middle way. We don't have to be especially wonderful or especially horrible. We don't have to do great deeds of atonement for our horrible, horrible, dreadful sins. We can just try to relinquish our selfishness and do the best we can. It's not that grand, generally. Trying to follow the middle way, not being something different, something special, something extraordinary. Just doing our best with kindness, patience, and compassion, as we say endlessly. Relinquishing selfishness. As I said, it doesn't mean getting rid of the self. It doesn't go away. It means training it. The self is always going to be there. We always have to work with it. Manjusri, the Bodhisattva of wisdom, sitting on this beast of self. The beast is wide awake, waiting for an opportunity to reach out and grab something, run off with Manjusri, assert itself. But Manjusri sits still, aware of his beast. But he doesn't try to kill his beast, he's not unkind to it. Sitting on his beast, kindly aware, with balance and with patience, and I think a certain little twinkle in his eye, a little good humour there. There's the beast, okay beast, you know. You've got to have a bit of humour with a self. We're not perfect. We just try to do our best. We all have this beast of self. And our beasts are different, a little bit different. Some beasts run around all the time and we have to slow them down. Some beasts don't want to get out of bed and we have to get them up. Some beasts will just look for, you know, everything they can get. Some beasts think, oh, I'm a terrible beast, I'm the worst beast, I'm the awful beast. And we just have to see, what do I need to do to keep my balance on this beast of self? And just be a reasonable human being, you know. Practice kindness, compassion, a little wisdom maybe, not having to be somebody special, especially good or especially awful. Kindness and restraint. Both kindness and restraint, both together. Kindness towards the things that we beat ourselves up about, and restraint towards the indulgences. And of course, many of us just veer wildly between the two, you know. I'll eat cake. Oh, eat all the cake. And I feel terrible about myself. Mum says, awful, awful. So I'll eat more cake to counteract this horrible feeling. It just, you know, I'm sure we all know a bit of that. Watching the mind is what it comes down to. As always, watching the mind, seeing where we're clinging onto something, letting go of our grip. What is it that, when I start to get upset, you know, what am I holding on to? Why am I upset about this little thing? Is it a self that feels threatened or endangered in some way or put down in some way or not getting what it wants, you know? It's a clue. Seeing where we're clinging, letting go of the grip. And again, it doesn't mean the thing goes away. It doesn't mean our attachments go away. We just don't grip on so hard. All the things we hold on to, the myriad, thousandfold, zillionfold things, and in particular, our view of ourselves, our history, our attributes, our likes and dislikes, our political views, the things we want, our endless opinions about absolutely everything. Sometimes it's hard to recognize that it's actually just an opinion and not ultimate truth. It's hard to see, you know. But usually, it's just a view. Endlessly distracted mind. We all have, some of us have a more distracted mind than others, an endlessly distracted mind, constantly bringing it back, bringing it back, bringing it back, over and over, relinquishing that thought, relinquishing that train. Oh, I just think this thought and then I'll come back to meditation. Never works, never works. Just, we can just let it go right there, let it fall to the ground with a clunk and come back to just sitting still, not even thinking, oh, I'm distracted again. Just come back. No judgment. Just come back. Constantly. Endless training of the self. Endless it is. Our Reverend Master Hubert, he was a remarkable person, but he wasn't a big self. He had many talents, he could speak a number of languages, he was a scholar of Sanskrit and Chinese and Japanese, and he did all these translations as we know. A remarkable person, and he had a great deal of wisdom. He would be able to cut right to the chase with something. Somebody said to him once, I hope they wouldn't mind my saying this, but it's anonymous, they said to him, I hate it here. I want to get out of here. I just want to get out of here. And he said, where is here? And this completely turned things around for the person, because they realized what they were trying to do was get away from themselves. You know, of course, if I'm not here, wherever I go, there I am. And it's going to happen again. So I might as well just accept it. These little things he would say to people, just little things like that, just really, really helpful. And above all, kind, endlessly kind. And then when death was coming, he left it all behind. It came along, took a long time. He was ill for a long time, gradually weakened, you know. Over a number of years, he had to relinquish things one by one. When he couldn't walk around independently anymore, he needed to have somebody with him because he might fall. He relinquished that. Then he couldn't translate anymore. Then he couldn't read anymore. And then he became weaker and more dependent on other people. He wasn't in control of everything. We'd give him food, nicely chopped up, and he would say, oh, too much salad, you know, too many vegetables. But he would eat them dutifully because they were given to him. But he didn't have much choice in that sense. He'd rather have had ice cream. And at the end, of course, that's what he ate anyway. And then he couldn't walk at all. And when he couldn't walk at all, he suddenly realized, oh, this is it. I can no longer walk. I'm dying, you know. I mean, he knew, but it suddenly came home to him. Whoa, this is it. That was just a couple of weeks before he did die. And then he, you know, stopped eating, stopped drinking, as people do when they're dying. And he didn't complain about any of this. He never complained that he couldn't walk around. He did say, too much salad, but he wasn't crabby about it. He was just, you know. He wasn't a saint. He wasn't a perfect human being. But he was endlessly kind and patient with all of these things. Good humor. He could still make a joke up to the end. He'd laugh, you know, he'd smile. If he came in, even if he couldn't talk anymore, you'd smile at him. And when he could see, he'd smile back. And sometimes he'd say, oh, it's so nice. He'd say, oh, it's so nice to see you, Ramata Hubert. He'd say, oh, it's so nice to see you too. I suspect maybe he couldn't even remember who you all were, but he was still happy to see us. Just relinquishing what needed to be relinquished with good humor, patience, all acceptance and kindness. And when the time came to die, he just left it all behind, just simply and peacefully, and went on his way. Nothing to fear, nothing to hold on to, nothing to push away. He went, when the time came, not before, not after. He didn't resist, he didn't grab on. He just went when it was time to go. Simply doing his best with whatever came his way, with deep faith. And maybe do as well. Relinquishing that which holds us back. Relinquishing the things that cause harm, that obstruct us, that cause suffering for ourselves, other beings. Just seeing them and kindly and gently letting go. That's our talk for the day. Thank you.